The following is brought to you in part by MFC Studios. The views of the show's host and guests do not necessarily reflect those of the management, owners, or staff of this radio station. And now, it came from the radio.
Yappa Toy, and welcome once again to It Came From The Radio, the official show of the Big Apple Con. This is your host, Mark Torres, speaking. With me in the studio, I have Suburban Fairy Tales creator and Archie Comics writer, Francis Binet.
Hello, hello.
So on this week's show, we're going to have at the New York Comic Con, we have the Mala Press Roundtable with actor Nikhil Kamokhalar.
Say that three times fast.
No, if you say it one time slow. And L-Man Jenny Feldy interviews filmmaker Kayla Marriott. But before we do any of that, we have to take it away with the news.
It's Morphin' time.
The news is brought to you in part by the fine folks of sci-fi.radio. That is sci-fi for your Wi-Fi, as well as the fine folks of the Big Apple Con, of which we are the official radio show of, celebrating over 26, 7, 8, 9 years of comic bookness and pop culture stuff. For more information, go to www.bigapplecc.com. The next convention is scheduled all the way in November the 21st of this year. Tickets are not on sale right now. Also want to give out shout-outs for our Patreons, of which there are Danny Grillo, award-winning director Jared Burrell, News, a famous resin media, Shadow Rabbit Art, Yasmin Array, The Hurricane, and Millie Portes. Want to have your own little shout-out? Go to our website, www.itcamefromtheradio.com. There's a little button on there that takes you right to our Patreon page. Also on our website, there is my book, Designated, a book about two warring alien races fighting over a newly discovered power source. The war finds its way to planet Earth, and as a result, some humans gain abilities. Issue 1 is on sale right now, and Issue 2 will be on sale this year.
Yay!
Also, I want to mention... Oh, I don't have my paper. No, I'm not going to mention it. I forgot my paper. So I guess we'll just take it away with the sand. Oh, here it is. On Wednesday, February 11th, we have our 101st live show at the East Middle Public Library. We're going to have an actor, Dewey, and they will be giving away a copy of their book, and we will also be giving away 2 free tickets to the Long Island Convention of Horror, which is a convention about horror in Long Island. Pretty simple.
Don't miss it.
So let's see. We have one bit of sad news. Actor Thomas Kent Carter, known professionally as just TK Carter, died recently. As of this recording, no cause of death has been announced. While in a handful of movies and TV shows, TK is perhaps best known for his role as John Carpenter's The Thing as Knowles. Knowles, N-A-U-L-S. You ever watch the John Carter Thing?
No, I never saw it.
You never saw The Thing? Wow.
Oh, The Thing. Yeah, I saw that.
John Carpenter's The Thing, yeah. He was in that. He played Mike Fulton in 24 episodes of the series Punky Brewster as a child. And most recently, he played Pike in the ABC series The Company You Keep in 2023. And my personal favorite, he played Clarence Hull in 24 episodes of the Fox series The Sinbad Show way back in 1993. He was Sinbad's best friend. That's where I remember him from.
Yeah, I remember that show.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
He was the best friend. Yes, that's T.K. Carter. He was 69, so I guess you're familiar with his work.
Yes, and when you mentioned Punky Brewster, I remember Punky Brewster, too.
Yeah.
I actually had an animated series of Punky Brewster I used to watch when I was a kid.
Really?
Yeah.
That I actually liked the theme song of the Punky Brewster.
And Glomer, he had the
Yeah, that was Glomer.
Hey, Punky Pal, it's me, Glomer.
Oh, my God, that's awesome. You know, that's one of the big-time voice actors is Frank Welker, who did that voice of Glomer, who was Megatron on...
Well, it's basically like the Gizmo voice, right?
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Bobby's World, too.
So Gizmo and Bobby, that's Howie Mandel.
Yes.
Who does that voice, but Frank Welker, who's like done everything. He's the voice of Scooby-Doo now, the current voice of Scooby-Doo, and he is the voice of Fred Jones from Scooby-Doo, and he, except for the feature film, he's done that voice in every iteration, and except for a pup named Scooby-Doo. But he's been Fred, the original Fred voice, for like 40 years or something. It's crazy.
Isn't Fred supposed to be like a teenager?
Yes, he is. So that's it for the sad news that he was 69. So we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more. It came from the radio.
Hi, you've heard my voice open and close the show. Now we want to hear your voice. If you have a business or product, you can record a commercial here. We offer 30 and 60 second spots. For more information, contact Mark at MFC_studios@hotmail.com.
Cosplayers, exhibitors, and celebrities, oh my! Stand by, Connecticut. Dragon's Realm Comic-Con is coming March 21st, 22nd at the Danbury Sports Dome, located at 25 Shelter Rock Lane. It will be Danbury's only premier comic convention. This event is your one-stop shop for everything pop culture, featuring celebrity meet and greets, exhibitors selling the coolest products, various discussion panels, a gaming area, and of course, cosplay contests. Tickets will be sold at the door or get them online via TicketSpice.com. Link for tickets are on our Facebook and Instagram pages. Visit drcomiccon.com for more.
Hi guys, this is Xenia Seberg, who plays Zev on the show Lex, and you're listening to It Came From the Radio.
BKG Productions, LLC, your ultimate audio transformation partner. Got audio that needs a magic touch? I am here to elevate your content. Specializing in professional audio editing, I can clean up background noise, plosives, and pesky S sounds. From podcasts to songs, I've got you covered. Whether it's an interview, music track, setting volumes to precise specs, email bkgvobiz@gmail.com or go to fiverr.com, search for BK Graves 1, and trust me to make your sound sparkle.
Meet Grimlock having fun on It Came From the Radio.
Me, Greg Berger, also.
My neural net processor is linked to sci-fi.radio, the sci-fi for my Wi-Fi. The more I listen, the more I learn.
Hi, folks. Andy Robinson here. And like all the good things in life, it came from the radio. Thank you.
Step into the fantastic world of cool kids comics and toys at 2055 Hempstead Turnpike, East Meadow, New York. Discover Comic-Con exclusives, the latest Funko Pops, and a treasure trove of new and vintage toys and comics. Whether you're a collector or a first-time visitor, we got something to spark your imagination over here. Visit Cool Kids Comics and Toys today. Let your adventure begin, huh?
Hi, I'm Elena Watko. I play Hyrel on Star Trek Discovery, and you're listening to It Came From the Radio.
Comic Books for Kids is the largest charity in the U.S. for comic books, toys, and pop culture items to children in hospitals and cancer centers. Donations of toys, books, action figures, Funko Pops, or anything pop culture related can be made to this organization. Find them at cb4k.org.
Hi, this is Amy Jo Johnson, writer-director from the film The Space Between, and you're listening to It Came From the Radio.
Looking to upgrade your outdoor space? Rare Products NY has you covered. Our universal pergolas are modern, durable aluminum structures designed to withstand the elements while adding style and value. Enjoy all-weather protection with adjustable louvers and glass options. Stay cozy in the winter with modernized screens and enclosures. Create a luxury ambiance with built-in LED lighting. And give your home or business a modern look that keeps guests coming back. For your on-site evaluation, call 516-225-8271. Email rareproductsny@gmail.com or visit rareproductsny.com. Rare Products NY. We've got you covered.
This is Carrie Steller from In the Girls Corner, and you're listening to It Came From the Radio.
Now, back to our show.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, that's it. That's the song.
Yeah.
I went to the end of the rainbow.
Wow, you know the lyrics.
It was an eight of gold.
I gotta add this to my Spotify list so I can memorize
it. 2 feet tall, 104 years old. He was happy.
So 80s. It's so 80s.
This is the best part, though. Here it comes.
Thank you.
to the drive with my windows rolled down. While listening to this.
And welcome back to It Came From the Radio, the official The Big Apple Con. This is your host, Mark Torres, speaking. And that was the animated theme song from the Punky Brewster Show. So we're going to talk about the regular, not a sad news, regular news. Ready, Brian? From the...
That's a lot of nuts!
Department. The new Avatar sequel has held on to the number one spot in the domestic box office for a fourth week in a row, pulling in an additional $21.5 million in ticket sales, beating out the new horror film Primate, which came in the number two spot, making $11.1 million in its first week release. For those of you keeping track, the aforementioned Avatar is currently the highest grossing film of this year with $344.4 million, followed by Zootopia Part 2 with $379.2 million. Now, because of these movies came out last year, the numbers are askew because this year Avatar has made $94 million and Zootopia has made $41.3 million. Have you seen Zootopia and or Avatar?
I have not, but I'm not I am surprised that I'm not surprised about Avatar because I heard bad things about this new one or it wasn't as good, but the first Avatar is like the world record, right? The
one I think Endgame is Endgame,
Endgame
above?
Avatar. I thought Avatar was...
Because they re-released Endgame to make it... To get the extra...
So that's how you do it.
Yeah. Because if you re-release it, you still add to the total because it's in theaters.
Okay, so the second highest grossing movie.
Yeah.
It's still a lot of money.
Yeah. I have seen Zootopia. It's a nice little movie. I like the first one. Like the second one. It's perfectly fine.
How does it compare to the first one?
I find it to be not as funny, but it still has some good jokes. It was entertainable. It was enjoyable and entertaining. It's a good kids film. You have a kid, right?
I do, and we're going to see it when it comes on Disney Plus.
Yeah, but she's one, two.
She's three.
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 Not yet. Not yet in the theater.
I don't think she'll be able to stay. She can't stay still when we're watching a movie at home. You have to pause, so. Yeah, I'm going to wait until it comes out on streaming.
All right. So when are you going to bring her to the theaters? Five?
When she's 18.
18. All right, fair enough. So let's see, moving on. All right, let's do this one. This is the serious one. From the This Does Not Look Good department, actor, director, and producer Timothy Busfeld has turned himself in after a warrant for his arrest was issued by the New Mexico Police Department. Tim is facing two counts of criminal sexual contact of a minor and one count of child abuse stemming from accusations from a set of twin child actors on the Fox series The Cleaning Lady. While not explicitly stated, it is heavily implied that the actors were Sebastian and Valentino LaSalle, who played the lead's youngest child, Luca, in seasons 1 through 3 of the series. The role was recast with Kaylin Roman Sanchez in season 4. According to reports, they allege that he inappropriately touched them, with one of them claiming that Tim, quote, rubbed his genitals and touched his buttocks on the set, and, quote, touched his private areas, in between takes on the set of The Cleaning Lady, once when he was 7 and again when he was 8. The other child actor allegedly told a forensic child interviewer that Tim, quote, started touching him for the first 2 years, and he did not want to say anything because he did not want to be mean to the director. The child did not disclose that he was touched inappropriate areas, but he did note that he did not like being touched. On October 3rd of 2025, the boy's mother claimed that both young actors were being groomed and that they both claimed that the abuse transpired from the fall of 2022 to spring of 2024. And she also said one of her sons told her that the counselor about the abuse in September of 2025. Timothy says, you want to read what Timothy says? Right there. The voice of the Timothy Busfield will be performed.
Timothy says, there we go. The children were never alone on set without the teacher, a welfare worker, or a parent. I mean, I'm always around people, right? It would be, you know, in front of the parents. There would never be a weird moment about it. I don't really remember picking those boys up. I don't remember it, if it happened. I don't remember overly tickling the boys ever, but it wouldn't be uncommon for me. That's kind of weird. And
so that's what, yeah. Let's see. And the investigator who interviewed all parties involved said that Timothy claimed an actress on the set of the show told him that the children's parents, quote, wanted revenge for the show not bringing them back for its fourth season. Timothy directed 6 episodes of the series, which was Season 2, Episode 11, Season 3, Episodes 1, 2, 3, Season 4, Episodes 1 and 2, and he was executive producer on Season 3 and for 2 episodes of Season 4. Fox canceled the series in June of 2025. The executives say, "The health and safety of our cast and crew is always a top priority, especially the safety of minors on our productions," a representative. "We all take allegations of misconduct very seriously and have systems in place to promptly and thoroughly investigate and, when needed, can take appropriate action. We are aware of the current charges against Mr. Busfield and have been and will continue to cooperate with law enforcement." So they issued a warrant. He turned himself in. He's like, "I didn't do it, but I don't want any problems, so I'm going in." It's interesting that they did recast the kid.
Yeah.
But it's not uncommon for them to not recast. Like, Stranger Things, they recast the twins in this last season. So it's not like, you know, it's so suspicious, but it is kind of...
It sometimes happens in Hollywood.
Right.
But that said, like, if this is true, I mean, they should lock this guy up and throw away the key.
Right.
But, you know, you don't know. It's possible that there could be jealousy or lying, or, you know, there's two sides to every story, as they say, right?
I think it's, but like I said, it just doesn't look good now.
It looks really bad.
I say we shouldn't reserve judgment until after everything is out and, you know, it all happens. But,
well, remember, like, it was Kevin Spacey, right? Like,
yes,
there was a lot of accusations against him, and then it turn out not to be true. But his career is like
Kevin Spacey.
Was it true or not true? That's the thing.
It's weird. Every single person that accused him, like, died under mysterious circumstances, so they never actually went to court. So, that's another one which is just kind of weird, but yeah. So let's move on to some happier news. From the Let's Make Another One department, none other than Asylum, the company for making low-budget rip-off films of popular movies, has announced that they're going to make a new Sharknado sequel. Sharknado Origins will take place before the first film, which was released in 2013, and is about, quote, "A teenage Finn and April cross paths during a perfect beach summer where sparks immediately fly. Just as Finn is about to seal the moment with a promise ring, the sky darkens and a massive funnel cloud forms, and you guess it, sharks dramatically erupt the ocean, and thus the very first Sharknado is born." Have you seen Sharknado? Are you a fan of the Sharknado
series? I've seen, like, the first 2 or 3, and then after that...
You quit.
I was like, all right, I'm done. I've seen enough. Why they need to make a prequel, I don't understand.
I mean, well, because you haven't seen all of them, so they kind of tied it up in a little knot at the end of the last one.
Well, the last one was like a time travel.
They had
one,
time
and I never
travel.
Saw that, but is so. I'm guessing something happened where now they can go into the past.
Well, spoilers. I mean, it's Sharknado.
Everyone's very loving the plot on this, so we don't want to spoil the...
They time traveled, and then they basically stopped the first Sharknado from happening. And so it kind of reset the entire universe back to the first movie, and then everybody was fine. So none of it actually happened.
Well, that's disappointing.
But now, I guess they're going to say, oh, well, this is what really, really happened.
So it's like a reboot, in a way.
It's a reboot, gotcha. Because now they don't even have to pay their actors, because now it's some new people going to be in it, because it's a teenage version of them.
Right, because Ian Ziering's probably very, expensive, demands a lot of money, and Tara Reid.
Yeah, I mean, well, for Sharknado people, money, that's like...
Yeah. Well, I mean, probably more than I'm making.
you figure, they did, what, 5 of them? 6 of them. 6 of them.
I thought it was 7. Was it 7?
7?
I don't know. I lost
They did
count.
A lot. They did a lot.
Like I said, after like 2 or 3, I was like, all right, I'm done seeing these movies.
I'm thinking 6. In my head, it's 6, but I mean, at one point, she turned into a robot, so like she had like jets and armor and stuff.
Interesting.
It was crazy. But the fact that they're going to do a sequel, obviously there's a demand for Sharknado.
You know, maybe the effects will be better now. You know, technology's advanced. Probably
not for Asylum. They don't. That's it's cheesy schlock special effects as part of the charm.
Nice.
All right, so let's move on. Let's see. We got another time for this one. From the No Go Power Ranger department. Recently, on a previous episode of our show, we discussed the new Ninja Kids Power Rangers collaborations, which resulted in a leaked trailer that heavily used AI. The internet backlash was swift and brutal, and then nothing. Now, A few months later, Ninja Kids made an official announcement for the state of their project. Ninja Kids says, "We have been doing everything in our power to release episodes 10 through 13 of Power Rangers Ninja Kids, and we have been wanting to share why we haven't, but this is all we can share for now. We submitted a teaser draft to Hasbro and Playmates, who both own, Hasbro owns Power Rangers. Playmates is the company that has decided to make toys for the Power Rangers and not Hasbro, on September 24th, and as a draft of the first episode on September 26th. Both Playmates and Hasbro initially reacted with excitement and shared that we exceeded expectations. We anxiously awaited additional feedback. Then on October 3rd, the unthinkable happened. Hasbro's legal team issued a cease and desist, claiming that Playmates didn't have the authority to make the deal with Ninja Kids in the first place. We were later told that the project looked too professional and it couldn't interfere with Hasbro's future plans. That was devastating. It was never meant to be. It was never meant to compete with an official reboot. Some of you later saw that a teaser after it got leaked on October 17th. Concerns were raised by a few people. It was a lot more than a few people about AI and visual effects. What you saw was never meant to be final. We were under tight deadlines to submit a rough cut, and like so many productions today, our editors and VFX artists used a mix of traditional techniques and newer AI-assisted tools to explore ideas quickly. We were genuinely excited seeing characters like Goldstar and Finster come to life in new ways that would have been incredibly expensive or time-consuming to do at that stage using only traditional methods. Most of the generative AI effects were simply placeholders, always intended to be replaced once we had clear creative direction and approvals. One example was the AI news anchor that was going to be replaced with, it was in the teaser, which was a standing in for a cameo role that we had already cast Jason Font, who played the Time Force Red Ranger, to play. We were also working on additional legacy cameos to pay homage to Power Ranger legacy and fandom. So essentially, they claim that the leaked trailer was a work in progress, yeah, and they use AI to meet deadlines.
It was a placeholder until they got caught.
I mean, it's as a huge Power Ranger fan, and I did see the trailer, I'm like, ugh. And it was really obvious how bad the AI was. But then it makes me think, like, that's not really a good excuse to say that's the reason why. And but then it was quote-unquote leaked. It was never their official release, but it was on their channel.
Yeah, and look, these things happen, but, I mean, you know my thoughts on AI. I've made them very clear before. I don't think that you should be using AI, but if it wasn't meant... You know, I'm playing devil's advocate here, but if it wasn't meant to be seen and they're just using this placeholder, I kind of get it. You know, sometimes you might go into ChatGPT and, you know, bounce ideas off of ChatGPT, but you shouldn't be relying on AI to generate artwork. You shouldn't be using it to write for you. You know, I've used it before, but it's like, hey, is this grammatically correct what I'm writing?
Right. It's weird because if you remember in the old days, they did have, like, temporary placeholders for special effects that weren't finished yet. Sometimes it was just scene missing that they used to do, yeah, like a little drawing or from the storyboard.
Yeah.
So I can understand the idea, but the fact that they were like, oh, we had no time, so we had to use AI just like everybody else.
Yeah.
I don't like how that sits, his explanations. I don't like how the explanation is sitting.
Yeah, I think he got caught, and you know, they're making excuses.
Yeah, but what's weird is that if it's Hasbro and Playmates working together, and then all of a sudden one company says, we don't like it, even though they both said we liked it, that's weird.
They want to appear the hero in this story and paint the other company as the villain.
I guess so. I mean, I don't know. I mean,
I like Playmates, like their action figures.
Right.
I bought, like, the Ninja Turtles figures that they've made before. But I like Hasbro, too. So, I don't know. I don't know whose side to lean towards.
It's just one of those weird things.
Yeah.
But who knows if it's actually going to see the light of day now? Probably not.
Well, not if the fans are, like, upset about it.
Right. So we have enough time. All right, so let's do this quickly. For the last bit of news, from the That's a Long Way to Go for a Lawsuit department. After 15 years, Nintendo has finally won his lawsuit against the French video game publisher Nacon regarding third-party replications of their Wiimotes, which, for you not paying attention, was their controller for the Nintendo Wii. Nintendo's argument was that Nacon, then known as Big Ben Interactive, had infringed on a European patent for the controller. Nintendo also argued that without third-party controllers on the market, the publisher should have earned 100% of the profits from the sale of Wiimotes around the world. Of note, the Nintendo Wii released in 2006 and was discontinued in 2013. Nacon has been ordered to pay $8.2 million in damages, interest, and legal fees, and they are appealing the decision.
Whoa.
That's crazy.
That you don't mess with Nintendo. That's one thing that anyone out there should realize. Nintendo will go after you with their lawyers. There's time and time again where they go after people making fan games or using any of their assets or IP in their videos. They will take you down.
But the thing, it's already done. They don't even make them anymore. They don't care.
They will drag it out for 15 years. They would have gone 20 years. They would have gone 25 years. However long it takes, they will take you down.
It's $8 million. Like, that's nothing.
That's
for
nothing
them.
For Nintendo. But it does. You know what? I think it's the principle, or just trying to make an example.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Fine. So we're almost out of time. So Francis, you have any final thoughts?
Don't mess with Nintendo. That's my thought. Don't mess with Nintendo.
So that is it for our news segment. Everybody listening to us on the air, we'll see you next time. For everybody else, stay tuned for more. It came from the radio.
Hey, this is Billy West from Show Business. You're listening to It Came From The Radio. Get out. Get out.
Now, back to our show.
Hi, I'm Mark Tartis, came from the radio. I am at the Mala panel.
My name is Nick Hill, Cam Kolker, and I play Robert in the film.
I worked with Indigo on an earlier film that she did, and so when the opportunity came to audition for this one, I jumped in and started off as being a horror comedy, I thought it was, because the other film was a comedy, but quickly realized that nope, this is more along the lines of the classic films like The Wicker Man and lately Midsommar, and kind of changed my approach to my performance. And so Robert is a resort manager of this resort on an isolated remote island. And the resort owner has died and has passed on the inheritance to her niece. So the niece is coming to the island, this island that's cut off from the mainland, and there's no communications between the mainland and this island. And so when she arrives, I become the guide to both introduce her to the island and then also to the dark magic that exists.
So as far as, is this, the previous actors, this is like their first or second movie. Is this your first horror movie, or have you done like more projects like this before?
I acted in a romantic comedy before, and this is my first horror film. I have directed more sci-fi projects myself, but this is the first opportunity to be in a horror film, which is really great.
What did you do in this that you kind of drew from your previous experience in being a sci-fi director and being a rom-com actor? For any parts, and like little lines, any intonations that you thought maybe if I do it like this character.
Do you watch Arrow?
Yes.
Okay, well, I stole a little bit, you know, from him, where he does this turn where he like starts like this and then he just fully turns. I think it got cut in the edit, you know. Okay. It's not something I worked on, but there are always moments of behavior that you kind of have as a human being that do persist from film to film sometimes, or you modulate them for the film. And in this one, I really went with stillness. Stillness was one of my key things. And then I also discovered, you know, gestures or symbolic things that I would do with my hands and with the things that I was wearing, like the necklace that I had around me, giving it a backstory, giving it meaning, giving it a relationship that I think nobody in the audience is necessarily going to know anything about unless they do a prequel, which I would push for them to. But it's really just for myself and for the truth of my character and their you know, existence in this world. The script becomes like a really, it is like a blueprint for an actor, because first of all, it's really sparse. It's not written like a novel. There's just very basic direction, basic dialogue. And if you just play to that, then you're not really building a character. You're just reading lines. So I work with my acting coach, as I always do on every film, and really delved into what it meant to construct this particular character. And what that basically means is you're going through every scene in the script, trying to figure out what you can glean in terms of the character nature, you know, what their backstory is, what their relationships are to the people that are currently alive and in the story, and to the people that are not in the story but they are talked about or they're discussed. So it becomes a real exercise in, you know, uncovering the character that the writer has unconsciously put on paper. You know, it's a really interesting game. Like, the work goes from the writer's consciousness onto paper, paper interpreted by the actor, interpreted additionally by the director, goes to a viewer, and it goes back into their consciousness. So it's a consciousness-to-consciousness connection. And if anywhere along that point truth doesn't hold, the thing breaks, right? So for me, it's mostly about script analysis, or whatever you want to call it. It's mostly about ensuring that I create a coherent character that fits in with all of the things that the character does and feels in the script.
So are you more or less the bad guy?
Was Darth Vader a bad guy?
Well, by some people's standards, yes.
He was Luke Skywalker's dad. Couldn't have been a bad character. The point being, I think good and bad are, you know, two ways, just two binaries, but I think there's a lot of grayness, and it's a sliding scale of grayness, and that can depend on who you're with, what's happening at that moment, and, you know, what your need is at that point. So I'm a nebulous, fully formed character.
I got that one.
So you said you've worked with Indigo before, and you played her dad, right, in another movie?
Yeah.
And you've also worked with Misha, because it was her writing,
yeah,
right? What is it like working with the same person in a completely different role? Like, how do you change that chemistry that you had to turn into what you got now?
That was the initial kind of, you know, concern. It was like, wait, I played her dad, and we had a loving relationship, father-daughter relationship, very touching. You know, I watched some of the scenes between us, I'm like, aww. And so for me to think, well, how is it going to be now? Now, if, you know, we're playing this role, is she going to be able to accept me, you know, in this way? Or am I going to be able to feel the threat from her, you know? So it was a question, and I just found that she just knocked it out of the park. As an actor, she's got something innate within her that I think allows her to go to those places at the flick of a switch, and I think that's a great skill to have. So right from the get-go, I think we just didn't even talk about it. We just got into it, and we just went with it. There was no discussion, no concerns once we were on set.
Since they're going to take you away, we should ask you what you want audiences to take away from this, because this is supposed to be our last question.
From the film?
Yeah.
I think Mala is a film that gives you a new texture and a new world in the horror genre. And I think you will enjoy it. If you liked films like The Wicker Man or Midsommar, which take you to a new place and a new sort of environment and rituals, I think Mala is going to really be a great addition to the OOV.
Cool. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Best of luck with the movie.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Olivia Younkers from Star Trek Picard, and you're listening to It Came From the Radio.
Now, back to our show.
And welcome back to It Came From the Radio, the official show of the Big Apple Con. This is your host, Mark Torres, speaking. Just want to take a few minutes to talk about something that I saw, and I thought our listeners, you guys out there, would enjoy it. So, as we all know, the new Avengers movie is coming out at the end of this year. So we are now in January. It's coming out in December. And they've been really promoting the movie almost too much, I would say, because it's so far in advance. And already, I think it's not, it seems it has a reek of desperation. Now, as people who know me or know the show is long enough knows that I do not watch trailers. I try to stay away from as much information about the movie as possible because I'm already going to see it. And as we've talked about many times on this show within recent years, any trailers are usually misleading, and they have parts in the movie that aren't in the movie. So the biggest example would be Rogue One and the Infinity War movie. And this is a common practice because the people who make the trailers aren't the people who make the movies in most cases, and they don't even know what the finished product is going to be like, and sometimes they have last-minute changes and the whatnot. But in more recent years, the trend has been that they put these things in the movie to make you want to go see the movie, but because they want to stop people from getting spoilers or having the movie quote-unquote ruined, they will change the trailer as to not give you information that's a surprise in the movie, which in essence is them lying. At any rate, there was a whole lawsuit about that with the movie Yesterday and Ana de Armas, not being in the movie, and they sued them for not showing someone in the trailer that's not in the movie. But anyway, I was scrolling through my YouTube channel, as I tend to do every once in a while, and I saw this clock for Marvel, the Doomsday Clock, and it's counting down from now until when the movie comes out. Now, what I found that bothers me is that it's a live counter on Marvel on YouTube right now. You can go right on there, type in Avengers Doomsday on YouTube, and it'll come up. And apparently it's running on all social medias, but it's a countdown. And the thing that gets me is that as of right now, there's hundreds of people watching the clock for no good reason. And it just bothers me to no end how ridiculous that is. I mean, I remember when they went all crazy for that chair thing that people were watching. But now this clock has been running for at least a good week, maybe even more. I just stumbled across it recently. And what happens is, luckily, when I use YouTube, I use my computer, and I have the ability to mouse over a picture, and 90% of the time, it will actually play. So I didn't even have to click the link. I saw the clock. I saw it one time, and I saw it again. I keep on seeing it because the algorithms and money, and they're trying to force you to watch this thing and get the clicks and whatever. So I go on there, I mouse over it, and I see it's just a clock. Why? And there was more people watching it when I first saw it. There was thousands of people watching the clock. But now it's a couple hundred. But still, why is there a couple hundred people watching a clock to a movie that's almost a year away? It bothers me to no end. And it makes me really concerned and really worried that this movie is going to be it's going to make the money because people are going to go and see it. But I don't think it's going to be any good. I have a suspicious feeling that this movie is not going to live up to the hype and the potential. And it's a shame because I'm a Marvel fan and I enjoy most of the movies. There's a lot of the missteps that they've had over the course of the time. I've mentioned many times on the show about being a huge Hulk fan and how they never did him justice. But the fact that this clock is just going on and they're pushing this movie for no reason because people are going to see the movie already. What else do they need to do? It's just very disappointing, and it worries me about the future of movies in general. If this works, then there's no one. There's going to be a 2-year clock, a 3-year clock. It's just that crazy. So that's just my thoughts on the 2 cents. What do you guys think? You can email me at MFC, that's Michael Frank Charlie, _studios@hotmail.com. And if you have a good comment, maybe I'll read it on the air. All right, so with that, we're going to take another break, and we'll be right back with more It Came From the Radio.
This is Michael Bell, the voice of Duke from G.I. Joe, and I am here at CradleCom, and I am with It Came From the Radio.
Now, back to our show.
You know you're listening to It Came From Radio, and if you didn't, now you do. This is Jay Feldy, Jennifer Lee Feldman. I'm here with Kayla Marriott. She's coming back to the show for the second time. She's a filmmaker, and today we're going to be specifically, or pacifically, pacifically, the Pacific Ocean, swear to tell the truth series. That's what we're going to talk about that today. Now, each of these episodes is framed around a character's police interrogation. The audience is told unreliable versions of the same fateful night, New Year's Eve 2015. This cold case quickly morphs into a psychological thriller about what people will do to keep the truth buried. I have stories about people I know very well who have gone to a great length to keep some truths hidden. And one day, I would like to make a 50 Cent style documentary about it. And I think many people will enjoy it, and I think some people will thank me. We'll talk about that another time, maybe. Kayla Marriott, welcome back. Round two. It's like a game show. I came from the radio. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me. I want to watch that that doc you're talking about.
Oh, yeah, I referenced some stuff in the last interview, kind of relates to that, and your other film. Tell us a little more, please, about your Swear to Tell the Truth series. What's this all about?
Yeah, so right now we're gearing up to shoot the pilot, so then we can pitch it to make the full series, and we can, you know, show all those interrogations. So the first episode starts with Amelia, who will be our main character throughout, and her version of the truth, and then... Yeah, deeper, it's really, you know, it's about the stories that we tell ourselves, what the lies that we tell ourselves to create the narrative that fits what makes us comfortable to go through life. And we were saying before we started filming that I gravitate towards, you know, making thriller and horror because I think it's a great genre to show like societal or the human condition, just how we experience life and how we deal with life. So this is a way to show how your perception of yourself and other people can morph the, like you said, like the tagline, the lies that they tell themselves. It takes place in a small town, which is somewhere I grew up in, a small town, and I'm deeply fascinated by that environment and how that shapes you, how that shapes, you know, who you become and who you pretend to be. Like I said, it starts with Amelia, and her character has not been back to the town in 10 years. She was very much an outsider in this town, and so she leaves as soon as she finishes high school, and she has to come back when the body is discovered and the investigation starts up 10 years later. And no matter how much she's changed or grown in 10 years, she's right back to who she was in high school because of the perceptions of the people around her and how they're treating her and how they see her. And that's kind of really hard to shape. We talk about, like, everybody has different narratives, different realities of life. Everyone has their own reality of how they see the world. And so I'm just kind of taking that long way to get to reality of how people see the world, and using the structure of this murder investigation. Each episode, each character is their different reality.
Yeah, I like that because I consciously think about how my reality is very similar to my dad's reality. Even a friend had his teeth done. He came at 10 o'clock and had his teeth done at the dental office. He's like, you're a clone of your dad. But the reality with my mom, which I learned to enjoy and respect at 41, it took me a long time. Her reality is totally different than mine. And it's taught me from a very young age, probably the age of 5. You know, what she sees, her perception is going to be totally different than mine. So that's something, you know, we should all keep in mind. Helps us relate to each other well. And another thing, I heard this in my 20s, so I'd say like maybe 15, 20 years ago, that basically your life will improve directly with how comfortable you are with having uncomfortable conversations and not lying to yourself. So I really tried to get used to having those uncomfortable conversations. And anyone that knows me well probably gets some off-the-wall texts from me and hears me say some off-the-wall stuff. But it's like, this is the truth. Let's have this uncomfortable conversation and let's deal with the truth or our truth. You know, what is the truth? And, you know, get uncomfortable to live a more comfortable life. So, All right. So next question. Do you also personally know people who've gone to great lengths to cover up their truths?
Not like in a big conspiracy kind of way, but I think everyone, every day, I mentioned before the reality that you create of your own life. You know, I can think of a lot of people who tell themselves these, it must be truths to them, but tell themselves stuff to reinforce the reality or the world or their life that they want to other people and to themselves, so they can convince themselves that that's what's true and that's their life, or that's what happened in this instance, so that they mm-hmm. can feel more comfortable or push stuff aside and just focus on what the narrative that works for them, that puts them in the best light. And I think that happens in so many instances. And that's another aspect that it's that I'm kind of focused on and interested in, because it's like these characters have told themselves these lies for 10 years. And it's almost like, can they even remember what actually happened that night, or how many times they've retold themselves that night as their lies? Because another thing that's interesting to me is memory. Memory is so malleable. I don't know if this is true, but if you've heard of, they're like, you're not remembering the memory, you're remembering the last time you remembered that memory, is something some people say. So it's just like, I think a lot of stuff changes, that you're like, oh, that happened 10 years ago, that happened 2 years ago or whatever. But where you are now kind of influences how you remember that memory and yeah. what you remember from it or what you've forgotten. So yeah, it's a fun box to kind of dive into.
Dealing with the truth is usually not comfortable, but mm-hmm. I've thought of this. Basically, I try to do this more and more every day. And I'm not saying I do it, but basically waking up that it's a new day and be comfortable with basically ripping up the narrative of yesterday and today's a blank slate. And that's the way to grow and that's the way to learn. But if I'm holding on to what I thought was the truth yesterday, I'm never going to learn today. If I'm introduced with new information, I'm going to have that pain in the brain. So,
yeah.
you know, the cognitive dissonance that actually yeah. feels painful in the body. So you got to just open yourself up to it and condition your brain to be, here, let's get some information that conflicts with what's in here. And if you don't condition yeah. yourself, you're never going to learn new stuff.
I love that. I like that a lot. I'm not a big New Year's resolution kind of person, but I was really thinking about, you know, you're carrying a lot of stuff from the past. It's, you know, some really heavy things, some personal stuff or whatever. And it's kind of hard to get through the day sometimes. But mm-hmm. if you do that blank slate, if you're like, today is a new day, and mm-hmm. what could the possibility be? And then especially like taking in new information and stuff. I like that yeah. a lot.
And also working on film sets, you know, every time you start a new film, it's like a new vibe, a new song, mm-hmm. a new cast of characters. So, you know, they say that the brain doesn't really know the difference between watching a film and when you're going through it as an actor, even a producer, you're going through these motions. So yeah. I think it, at least for me, working on film sets has trained me to like, all right, new set, new day. You know, I taught workout classes. I'm on set. Whatever I was doing outside, I'm here. We're doing a workout class mode, and I'm able to just get into this different zone. The second I'm out, I might be a different person entirely.
Yeah.
And that really helps you get through life. Anyway, yeah. so let's talk about financing. Now, financing films, crowdfunding, Indiegogo, begging, lying, stealing, cheating. You know, I'd say weekly or sometimes every day, it's a question that people talk about. And they'll ask me about it, and they'll text me about, how should we finance this? What's the budget? Blah, blah, blah. So how did you get the money to finance a film? No, how do you go about financing your films?
Yeah, I think it's different for each film. It's different for each project, like who you approach and stuff. Because like you said, I think a lot of people can be phony, especially in the film industry. I mean, you'll go to events, or you'll go to like the mixer after a festival or something. And you can point out the people who are really just there, whether they're young and they don't know better and they're just hungry and they're just there to talk to the exact right person that will get them further. And you can tell that's why they're talking to people.
Oh, yeah.
So I just try and be myself. And if that like resonates with people, if people, you know, I have a good conversation with someone, I'm not trying anything, you know, and if my project comes up in some way and it resonates with them, and whether they can finance or they know someone, or down the line, I'm like, hey, I need a 1972 Chevrolet or something, like, you know, there's so much, you know, so much for film, you need like the oddest of things. Okay. In this project, we need a squad car, a police car, and that can, for a day rate on a film set, that can be quite expensive. And luckily I helped out a buddy who knows someone who has all these different kinds of police and like ambulance, stuff like that kind of cars. And he's just helping out. And all we have to do is pay for the gas.
Amazing.
Yeah. So
overused word, but it works. It really is amazing.
Yeah. And that's just, I help someone else out, just trying to be a genuine person and be kind to people. It's really hard to make any kind of film. So if I can help someone out, I'm not someone who has money, as I'm crowdfunding for this one. If I can help out in a different way, I would love to, especially because I know that person probably would help me out in return. But in this case, to sort of tell the truth, we have a fiscal sponsor, so it's tax deductible. And that's been really great at approaching people who like to donate to art in general. Since it's like this, it would be the same thing as like donating to a museum and stuff. So that's been really helpful for our crowdfunding process. But yeah, there's so many ways to go about it. Sometimes it can feel so shameless. It's a part of filmmaking that is unavoidable.
That's the part I've avoided. I don't like my whole life. I've luckily fallen into, I think, every single job for the most part. It's just, I walked into a gym one day, I had to pee. That's how I started training. I ended up teaching the main 2 out of 3 morning classes at this gym. I mean, everything, asking them, oh God, I'm not used to that. Now switching gears, you work full time as a script supervisor in the Bay Area. We're on the radio, so I can't quote too short. This is killing me. So, all right, whatever. In short, insert the too short line. Now you work on features, commercials, shorts. What's that like?
It's amazing. I love working on so many different projects. I love being freelance. Like you said, as your experience on set, everything's new every time. You're working with different people. The Bay Area film scene is pretty small compared to LA, but it's very tight knit, and it's really, really good people that are looking out for each other, helping each other out, being genuine, which I've been grateful for, because as a script supervisor, I get to work with every department, and working with every department, that's been able to get the crew that I have on for this pilot, some really awesome people. And that's just from, you know, working on set. And as a writer director, you know, normally you have some type of day job. You're not just gonna like walk into, you know, being able to make like a multi-million dollar feature film. But I'm really grateful that my day job is still working on set. Like, that's what I do for a living, so that I can, it helps with connections, so I don't have to just like go to these filmmaker meetups with half the time, like we said, feels quite fake. But yeah, I just love it. And then being a director, as a script supervisor, you're right next to the director the whole time. You're like the director's second brain, helping them out. So I just feel like I learn so much. I see so many different perceptions or perspectives of how they go about directing, working with actors, how they are on set. So it's just so much fun. I love it.
So what do you do when an actor repeatedly drops a line? They're like, line! Line, has that happened? Like, do they get fired? You yell at them? You beat them? What do you do?
I don't have any control over that. I just, you know, have to puppet the line back. But that hasn't happened repeatedly. I was on a short, thinking about this, I was on a short where it happened a couple times in a scene. It was a pretty long scene. It was an indie project, so we were shooting more than we should have in one day. So we were really crunched for time at the end. And the lead actress was like on it all day, but then we had this really big scene and we had to really shoot it for coverage. Like we weren't cutting it up anymore. So she was maybe like dropping some lines at the beginning or at the end and stuff. A couple times she called out for line, but I don't know how your experience, but I feel like most actors just are in it. Very often they might just skip a chunk and just keep going. A couple times they might ask for lines, but really it's like afterwards talking to the director being like, kind of missed this bit and this bit. And then we might just get like that up in a different coverage or like a pickup of just like these 3 lines we need again clean. But yeah, I've been very lucky that I've worked with a lot of very professional, great actors that know their lines.
Thank God for that. Yeah, I actually was on a set, and I mean, it's funny. I'm not going to say who it is. I'm sure he'd be fine with it, but I have these, it's not in frame, but I have these giant piece of paper that I haven't used in like 15 years for myself, but we actually stuck them on the ceiling. So when he was lying down, you could see his lines, and I became a human billboard. And with my legs, I'm lying down holding this, you know, like the sandwich board, holding these lines so he can see, because he just can't memorize the lines. But mm-hmm. when he got them, they were so good. They were better than, I think, everybody. He was, I mean, I even showed a friend this film last night, and he commented, just like almost everyone comments when he sees them back, amazing. But when it comes to memorization, you know, memorization is a really important part of acting, unfortunately. You know?
Yeah, I could never. There's so much. Trying to fund this project and talk about my stuff, like having to make videos for my like social media or things like that, trying to memorize a little blurb. I'm like, I don't know how they do it. I could never do it.
Teleprompters.
Yeah. Yep.
And maybe we'll have those glasses, or maybe they already exist where you can see it in the glasses. You know, like you just have the lines there, like a teleprompter in your glasses. Hey, Zuck, Mark Zuck, come on, get on with it. All right, so last question. We've got a few minutes left, so let's see if we can do this in a few minutes. Now, mm-hmm. I've definitely said this. I haven't said this recently, but I remember I used to say it all the time, and I know I said it all the time. You know, you're saying things a lot when your friends and the people around you start saying, oh, you said this, da-da-da. So my friend back in 2010, Giovanna DeSara, she was a woman I worked with. She did a lot of things for different modeling agencies and DC Stop Modern Slavery. There was a whole movement. But she said to me back in the day, oh, yeah, I will never forget what you said to me. And I live by this now. I act as if everything I do will end up on the cover of the New York Times one day. And I still do that. So if I can't deal with that, I don't do it. If I think this text is going to be posted and I can't deal with everyone seeing it, I don't send it. I live as if I'm going to be hacked every day for like 20 years. So with that rule, do you think that time reveals all truths? Do you think we get away with stuff?
I mean, there's probably cases where plenty of people have gone away with stuff, right? We hear that all the time. You know, the more power, the more money, the more secrets you can keep.
True.
But I think for most people, it would eat away at them, I would think. They have these lies or deceit or they've been, you know, keeping stuff buried for so long. I think it would be impossible not to slip for those lies in that world to start to unravel in a way that string starts being pulled. I can say, to relate it back to Swear to Tell the Truth, it's a ticking time bomb, especially once the body's found. Is there's only so much they can do continuing to try and bury and bury and bury what they're keeping, as, you know, the detectives are pulling on the string as they turn on each other to try and keep the secrets. So in that case, yes, time definitely reveals all truths.
You're only as sick as your secrets, and to quote Zoolander incorrectly, that keep pulling the string and then the whole sweater will unravel. Don't they say that in Zoolander? But maybe. Anyway, please tell our listeners where to find you, social media's final thoughts.
Yeah, you can find me at Kayla Marriott on Instagram, and then there should be some links to the Swear to Tell the Truth stuff, or on my website, which is also just Kayla Marriott. So yeah, come check it out, see what you like, if you resonate with anything, if you just want to chat, I'm open to it. I love people.
Well, I look forward to seeing the series. And now back to the studio with Mark Torres for more It Came From the Radio.
If you had any honor, you would listen to sci-fi.radio, the sci-fi for your Wi-Fi. Kapla!
Now, back to our show.
So that about does it for this week on It Came From the Radio. Join us right here any week on this radio station. If you miss any part of this show,
tough.
Go to our newly revised website, www.itcamefromradio.com. The archives will be up in a week or so. Check us out on such places as btd.radio, sci-fi.radio. Check us out on our places such as Facebook, Instagram, YouTube page, Twitter.
And always follow the cost-benefit ratio. If the benefits outweigh the costs, do it. If the costs outweigh the benefits, don't do it. Or
just Google It Came From the Radio.
And we'll see you next week.
You've been listening to It Came From the Radio with Mark Torres. The views of the show's hosts and guests did not necessarily reflect that of the management, owners, or staff of the station. We now return you to your earthly scheduled broadcast.